Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and we have a player's player with us today. Man, I've been excited because when I first saw some videos of Chuck Ward, I didn't even know what to say, or like I was exasperated just after watching him play. He's a tremendous, just a phenomenal guitarist, and he really has total mastery of his instrument. So I'm happy to bring him to the show today. Chuck Ward, here you go. Chuck was born on April 30th, 1990. So you're only 27.
Yep.
27. Holy crap. Wow. To Dan and Doreen Ward in Northwest Indiana. He was raised on pure country music, his dad being a steel guitarist and lead singer in several bands across the region for many years. Chuck picked up the guitar at age 12 and within several months was playing lead guitar with his dad's band. Not hard to believe based on what I've seen. After graduating high school, Chuck took to the road with regional bands, touring the country 300 days a year. Wow. At 21, Chuck relocated to Nashville and he took to playing the clubs up and down Lower Broadway, eventually landing gigs with artists such as Matt Mason, who was CMT Next Superstar winner, and Georgette Jones, who is the daughter of George Jones and Tammy Wynette. Currently, Chuck's a session player, and he's also touring with country music star Craig Morgan for the last 3 years. Chuck endorses and is sponsored by the following companies: Cargi Guitars, Paul Reed Smith Guitars, KJL Amps, MXR Pedals, EMG Pickups. And if you ever want to see someone playing EMG Pickups in a Telecaster, please look on YouTube for Chuck Ward. Way Huge Pedals, Wampler Pedals, Exotic Effects, Dunlop Strings and Accessories, Tortex Picks, Eminence Speakers, G7th Capos, and Breedlove Acoustic Guitars. Chuck, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. I was really turned on by your playing when I saw it, man.
No, thank you.
You're obviously extremely influenced by your dad. You grew up with him as a musician. You played in his band. What do you think was the most important lesson you learned from your father as far as playing tone and also the business side of being a musician?
Definitely when to play. My dad always really instilled on me as a player to, you know, not step on anybody's toes on stage. If someone else is playing, just back off and, you know, play some rhythm. And if the singer's singing, don't play over the singer. That's something that has really stuck with me my whole life of playing, is just knowing when to play, and sometimes less is more, basically.
Hmm. What about tone? Does he give any, you know, how was he an influence on you tone-wise?
He turned me on to all my favorite guitar players of now, and, you know, guys like Brent Mason and Vince Gill is another one of my favorites, and he just really showed me the stuff that he liked and that I liked, and just went from there with it.
Have you met any of those guys since you've been in town, Brent Mason?
Yes, I have. Me and Brent have actually became pals, and I've done several shows with him, and he's just a great guy, and obviously everybody knows what a fantastic player he is, but even if he never played guitar, he's just a really nice person.
And your guitar is kind of like very similar to Brent's, and, you know, from the color standpoint, was that intentional, like, or just randomly worked out?
Yeah, I actually, that guitar that you're talking about, that's one that my dad built for me. He builds guitars also, DWC guitars, and I play those as well. And that guitar that looks like Brent's, I actually had one of my guitars stolen several years ago, and we got the neck back, surprisingly, that it was attached. The guy parted out the guitar and attached the neck to a different body, and we found it. And the reason that we could prove that it was that neck is a guy called my dad's company because he hadn't heard of the name on the headstock, and my dad found out that it was on a body that my dad never built. And I had spilled super glue in my case, and there's super glue all over the headstock of that neck.
Yeah.
And my dad asked him, he said, yeah, there's something all over the headstock. My dad basically said, well, we need that neck back now. It's a stolen part. So I got the neck back, and my dad was building me a new guitar, and he had a body at the house that was already kind of scratched up. And I did a show with Brent in Indiana by my parents' house, and Brent let my dad get up-close pictures of the guitar and everything, and it's pretty much mimicked down to the T, every scratch and everything on it.
Very cool. Your parents, your parents must have been so proud of you sitting watching you doing a show with Brent.
Yeah, it was. My dad definitely said that was one of the proudest moments, you know, seeing me get to play next to one of my idols.
That's really cool. That's a good thing for your family. How weird is that, though, that someone steals a guitar and then separates the neck from the? I mean, that's like a whole thing is weird, isn't it?
It was a really strange turn of events. It was about a year later. I had kind of, you know, just given up hope of ever getting anything from that guitar back. And out of the blue, it showed up with a Schecter Telecaster body attached to it. I didn't even know Schecter made a Telecaster body.
Yeah, but I didn't either. She said it. That's so weird. That whole thing is weird. That's like, you know, I could see you steal a car and take it to a chop shop. Guitar, usually, like, it's, you know, you steal because you're lazy.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. So the thought of like, oh, let me fix up this guitar, and that's like totally opposite to thief mentality, I would think. But whatever, I'm glad you got the neck back at least. How about the business side of being a musician? Were you able to learn some things from your dad that maybe saved you some pain or stress or anxiety once you moved and became, you know, a professional on your own?
The biggest thing that I would say that saved me some stress and anxiety was whenever there was a problem, I could always call my mom or dad, and they would always give me the advice I need if it was something on the business side, you know, if whatever it may be, even the smallest thing to the biggest thing. If I ever needed advice, I always had my mom and dad to call on and ask them questions.
That's great, man. Like, I'm assuming, like, I've talked to some younger guys, and they said one of the big issues for them is, like, negotiating and, you know, determining a value for your services.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah, that's still something, you know, it's hard to kind of decide, you know, put a price tag on yourself. Basically, it's kind of weird doing that because you don't want to undercut yourself, but you don't want to charge too much. And it's a fine line to walk between, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what's a good price to give somebody, but also, you know, to reward yourself with your work.
Yeah.
So yeah, I always just try to stay as fair as possible with anybody that needs work.
Yeah, I always say fair means fair to both parties. It means fair to you and fair to them, you know, and that might mean you both have to say ouch a little bit or, you know, whatever, but it's fair means fair to everybody, you know, and you get what you pay for.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then sometimes, you know, like in business, people have tried to, you know, in my business, I do a lot of marketing consulting, and people have tried to, well, I don't want to pay that much. I say, no problem. What work do you want to cut out?
Yeah.
You know, like, you want to pay me less? No problem. I'll do less. You know?
Yeah.
Totally cool, man. But just let's, you know, be fair. Your playing is like you're not just incredibly fast, but you're really clean, very melodic. And so I was wondering if you had any, and I hate to use the word tricks, but for guitarists out there who want to increase their speed, any any effective strategies that you would recommend besides obviously practicing them with a metronome, practice, practice, practice?
The big thing I did is I hybrid pick. Hmm. So that definitely adds. I mean, there's plenty of fast players that flat pick, but for me that works really well. And one thing that I learned a long time ago, and I do this still today, my best friend, the guy that really taught me how to play guitar, his name was Danny Patton. He played for Billy Walker, and unfortunately he passed away in the car wreck with Billy Walker and Charlie Lilly and all them guys. And Billy's wife, Betty. But Leon Rhodes told Danny one time to practice playing with your thumb off the back of your neck. Don't let your thumb be a crutch for you. So when you're practicing something, just use your fingers, and then that way when you have that anchor of your thumb, it'll seem so much easier to get the job done. And that really does help.
It helps in what way? To build the strength and the dexterity of your left hand?
You take your thumb off the back of your neck and it becomes harder to play. And so if you can get a scale down to a certain speed without the thumb, as soon as you have the thumb there, it becomes way easier to get the job done. I've done that, and that seems to help.
Man, that's great. That's really clever. That's like, you know, when you're a kid playing baseball, you put a donut on the bat and start swinging with a weight.
Basically the same idea.
Very cool, man. I've never heard that. Thank you. That's a great one. What I know you're a pure country guy. What do you like most about country music? Like, what does it turn you on? What about it turns you on the most over other genres?
I would say that, especially in the, you know, from the early 2000s and all the way back, it would be the signature guitar parts. Right when you turn a song on and you hear a guy like Brent, or back in the day, you know, Reggie Young, or all them guys, you know exactly what song it is by the guitar intro, or even the pedal steel intro, or whatever instrument it may be doing kicking it off. I mean, even people that don't listen to country music, when they hear the first couple notes of Chattahoochee, they know what song it is.
Mm, very true.
I love the signature parts.
The twang also, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, obviously the tone and the story songs also. I love a song that can tell a story in 3 minutes.
So you're probably not a huge fan of, like, quote, the new country.
I like it all, if you know, if it's what's going on, you know. I mean, I do a lot of sessions where it's the newer style, and luckily when I was younger playing, I had those years when I ventured into some other styles of music where I got really into guys like Zakk Wylde, stuff like that. So that kind of, honestly, playing that type of stuff got me where I know just enough of the heavy rock stuff that I can go in and approach a modern sounding country song, like an Al Dean song is basically, I mean, you listen to the guitar riffs on there, it's kind of, you know, Zakk Wylde heavy-ish, you know, it's not obviously as heavy as Zakk, sure, but it gets your mindset in there. So I'm kind of glad that I had those years where I was into that other genre of music really heavily. And I still listen to it today.
That's a guy who is got such a unique, I mean, you can't mistake Zakk Wylde sound for anybody else.
Exactly. So he's distinct. A huge country fan, and it really, when you really listen to Zach's playing, you can hear it. You know, he'll throw in basically a B bender lick with a lot of overdrive.
He's so distinct, that guy.
Oh, he's great.
Hey, what are you working on now that you're most excited about? I know it's kind of the off season for touring.
Yeah, we just wrapped up our. Our last show was actually at the Ryman for the Opry, so it's always a great blessing to get to play the Opry, and especially at the Ryman. And right now I'm just working on some studio stuff, you know, got some calls for sessions, and really excited about this new relationship that I'm building with the Cargi Guitars. We were playing a festival in Massachusetts, and our merch guy, well, Craig, actually came out and said, man, you got to go out here. There's this guitar booth set up at this festival. And a lot of times, you know, when there's something like that set up at a festival, it's usually like a mobile pawn shop. You know, you never know what's going to be out there guitar-wise. And I went out there, and these guitars just blew my mind. The guy that builds them, Randy, he just puts so much love and really just thinks about what he's doing, and they're just an amazing, amazing instrument.
And they're out of Massachusetts?
Yes.
Cool. So you're one of their endorsed, you know, guys who they sponsor, I guess.
Yeah, I just got in with them, and I had to have that guitar the first time I played it. I got a Sunburst Tele style guitar from him, and as soon as I played it, I was talking to Randy, and I'm like, man, I gotta take this guitar home with me. And I just fell in love with it. I actually just ordered another one, and they're just an amazing instrument.
What do you like about it as compared to like a conventional Fender Tele even?
It's built a lot like an early to mid 60s Tele, which is when I think that the great era of Fender obviously was. And
in what way?
Completely handmade. Mainly the handmade aspect of it. Because nowadays when you get, you know, a guitar off the shelf, you know, you'll play 50 of them before you find one that really has that right feel to it. And I've never picked up a vintage Fender and I was like, man, I just hate this thing.
Sure.
The vintage ones just always feel good because there was so much more care in them. And now they're just mass produced and thrown out. And these guitars are farly just over the top when it comes to being able to compare them to Fender or something like that.
What are the necks like? Are they thick, thin, round, flat?
You can get whatever you want. I got a pretty fat neck on this one. It's a pretty chunky neck, and I usually ain't really a fan of those. But this guitar felt great, and this one feels amazing. There's just something about it.
Cool, man.
It just feels like home.
Awesome. That's a pretty resounding endorsement. You're originally from Indiana. What was your childhood like growing up?
I grew up country, really country. My closest neighbor was a quarter mile down the road, and that was my aunt.
Wow.
So the town I grew up in, Wheatfield, Indiana, that I think the population is like 840,
holy
something like
smokes.
That. And just grew up hunting and fishing and doing stuff with my family, and always been very close to my family, my parents and my grandparents especially.
Cool.
And just grew up country.
You doing any hunting now?
I haven't been able to go this year because we were on the road so much, and then when we did get off, I've just been swamped with studio stuff and picking up gigs downtown on Broadway again, and I just haven't had time to go.
Well, good, man. Make hay while the sun's shining. I'm glad to hear that.
That's right.
What kind of work did your folks do? Was your dad a full-time musician?
No, he wasn't. He's a mechanic, actually, and he played on the weekends. He still plays on the weekends, actually.
That's really cool. So do you go back home, you play together with him when you go back home?
Oh, yeah. Anytime I'm home, I play with him.
Man, that's got to be so much fun.
Oh, yeah, and it's all real good country music. When I left the band in 2008 to go on the road, the newest song we were doing was Watermelon Crawl. So that was like 10 years old at the time. That was still new country to my dad.
So like you basically went from picking up the guitar at age 12 to playing lead in your dad's band within a few months. This is an awkward question for you to answer. Are you like a child prodigy or like what, you know, like what do you attribute that to? Most guys don't pick up a guitar at 12 and then like, you know, 6 months later, they're playing lead in an adult, you know, band.
Well, I mean, that being said, I wasn't wasn't the player I am now, of course.
Of course.
But I attribute it to just a lot of hard work and a lot of willing people that give me a chance to play, that weren't mad if I messed up, just kind of let me go out there. And if I messed up, they just kind of brushed it off and told me, hey, this is what you're doing wrong. You know, work on this and that. My dad had a great bunch of guys, still has a great bunch of guys in his band, and just lots of practice. When I first started playing, I had cassette tapes of my dad's band from back when Danny Patton, the guy I mentioned, was playing guitar with him. And I had a full night, so I had four sets on cassette. And every day when I get home from school, I'd put in the cassettes, and I'd have to tune my guitar to the cassette tuning, you know, it wasn't in 440. So I had to find that, and then I'd sit there and I'd play basically the whole gig every day after school. I'd just go through and play every song and try to copy what Danny did to the best of my ability. And Danny was already living in Nashville at that time, so if I had trouble, he would actually teach me stuff over the phone. I'd call Danny and say, hey, how'd you do this lick that you did on like Rocking Chair by George Jones or something. And he'd be like, well, let me grab a guitar real quick. And he he'd figure out what he did, and I'd kind of hold the phone by the speaker. And that's how I took lessons from Danny. It wasn't in person, really, unless he was visiting home.
Sure.
And then we get together in person.
This sounds like it was a real supportive and group of mentors, really, that, you know, basically wanted you to succeed and gave you the freedom to mess up and here and there and not be perfect.
Yeah, big time. They're still some of my best friends I'll ever have, all them guys back home, and guys like Rick Crane and Nelson Wynn, Tom Willoughby and Terry Boyland, all these guys are just, I grew up playing with them for like 5 years every Saturday night, and they've just been a big help.
That's awesome, man. That's a real good, real nice story, man. What prompted you to move to Nashville then?
I always wanted to move to Nashville, and I'd always told my friends and family I was going to wait till I was 21, just that way I wouldn't have to worry about taking a gig at a bar and not knowing if I was going to get to come in and play or not. So I went on the road, like I said, or like you mentioned, like 300 days a year with regional bands, traveling in a van and trailer, sometimes if we were lucky, sometimes just an extended cab pickup truck and trailer, all the way to Wyoming in the winter.
Wow.
And they were some of the roughest road times ever, but times I wouldn't trade, because it really makes you grow up quick when you go out there and you get thrown into situations where you're doing the 2 weeks straight at a club where no one comes in until the weekend, and you're staying in whatever crappy motel that they put you up in for the week. It just, you grow up quick, learn how to make ravioli in a coffee pot.
Well, it's all, you know, it's all character building, man. It makes you who you are today. And then it gives you such an appreciation when you have a separate stove, even.
Oh, yeah.
For little things.
I remember the one that always stands out, and it's kind of a stepping stone for a lot of musicians, that when I moved to Nashville, I realized that a lot of people remember the Satellite Inn in Rock Springs, Wyoming. That's one that me and my family will never forget. And most people, if anybody listening's ever played there, they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Satellite Inn. What was special about that?
Oh, geez. What was special?
Vibrating beds for a quarter or something?
It was terrible. Well, we were there in January for 2 weeks in Wyoming, so you can imagine how cold that was.
Wow.
And the hotel rooms didn't have heat except for one of them little, like, silver space heaters. You know? Oh. Yeah, and if you turn that and the TV on at the same time, it'd kill all the power.
Holy crap.
It's just a terrible, terrible, nasty place. But it was paying the bills at the time, and like I said, it was just a big learning experience. And I wouldn't trade those times, and the guys that I worked with are still great friends of mine. And I wouldn't trade those times for anything.
And that's the Satellite Inn where in Wyoming?
Rock Springs.
Rock Springs, Wyoming. That's so funny.
Sure. I'm not sure if the hotel – it was there still a few months ago, because we actually had a day off with Craig. And so we actually went by there, because a couple of the other guys in the band remembered playing there. So we went and seen it, and it's still kicking.
So it's a conventional band stop.
Yep, regional. It's one of the stops on that regional tour when you go out there.
Wow, interesting, man. Hey, let's talk gear for a few minutes. So
yeah.
I'm assuming the Kargi is your go-to guitar right now?
Yes, definitely. I just used it on a session yesterday and on a gig downtown on Broadway yesterday, and it's just, I love it right now. That's my main thing.
What are your other top two, like, go-to guitars that would make, you know, round out your top three besides the Kargi?
Right now, next to me in the stand that I've got out, especially for the session stuff, I have the Kargi, and then I have Paul Reed Smith, 509. I love that guitar, extremely versatile. And I also have one that my dad built me. It's a bead bender Tele, one of the DWC guitars, and that's a bead bender. Those are probably my three go-tos. And then I still have my first Fender Tele that I ever had that'll always be with me. That's been to every country that I've been to, and it's just my that's the baby, basically.
Sure. So. Is your PRS a humbucker or a single coil?
It's a hum single.
Okay, hum single. So that's the only hums you play, really, isn't that PRS?
A lot of my tellies have hums in the neck.
Yeah, right.
Many hums.
Right.
Yeah, the Brent Mason style thing with the middle pickup on its own volume control.
Sure, that's right. Any cool or interesting stories behind how you got any of your guitars? I mean, the DWC your dad made for you, obviously. Anything like you're on the road in Rock Springs in desperation and you happen to find something? Or
I did buy in Billings, Montana, we were on the road, and I went to a resale shop, and I bought a 1967 Tele off of a guy in there, and the guy, whoever had it, had put this really gaudy turquoise block inlay up and down the neck of it. So I have it being restored back to original right now. But at first I was like, man, there's no way this is real because of what he wanted for it. And so I pulled the neck on it, and sure enough, it's marked October 3rd, 67.
Wow.
And I wound up walking away with that guitar for $900
for
a 67.
Who's doing the restoration work?
A guy back in Indiana named John Lynch.
Oh, wow. So you said you still really have your deep roots there.
Yeah, definitely.
Interesting.
John's been working on my stuff since I started playing. And I worked in John's shop for a little bit in high school.
Funny how even though you're in Nashville with no shortage of guys to fix that, you know, you went back home. That's interesting. I think because guitars are so emotional, you know, you want to get someone. It's like, you know, who are you going to have babysit your kids Saturday night when you go out, right? You know,
exactly.
I totally get that, man.
Yeah, my dad still works on my cars, obviously, being a mechanic.
Oh, hell yeah. Hey, so who are your biggest influences guitar-wise?
Definitely Danny Patton, the guy that I mentioned that passed with Billy Walker. He was my best friend and just taught me so much with tone and playing and just all kinds of advice. And I mentioned Brent Mason, obviously everybody, every country player's hero pretty much. Vince Gill, one of my favorites. His tone to me is just so perfect. I love Vince's tone. And I love that he can take a solo and approach it almost like he sings and just make it so smooth and doesn't go so outside of the box where people don't understand it, you know. Even someone who's not a guitar player can appreciate the solo and whenever you come around, you know, because it's so melodic.
Yeah, I would love to see, like, a show with him with the Eagles now.
Oh, I would love to. They were in Atlanta, and I was going to go down there, but we were on the road, and I would love to go see that show.
I saw them about four years ago. They were down here in Tampa, the last tour, you know, when Glenn Frey was obviously still alive. And it was a really fantastic show. I'd be curious what it's like with Vince.
Yeah, I'm a huge Eagles fan also. So that would be great to see one of my favorite country guys singing with my favorite rock band. I'm also a huge, another big player that I really love and respect is Jimmy Olander from Diamond Rio.
Yeah, I know who that guy is.
I love
sure.
his playing.
Yeah, he is a great
love
player.
Love his playing.
He's a really good player. Do you remember the first record or CD you ever bought?
It'd probably be Merle Haggard, one of his greatest hits. I'm a huge Haggard fan. And that actually the first full song that I ever learned was Ramblin' Fever. And I got that album, The Greatest Hits, and wore that out playing along with that.
Good man.
And then it would probably be Hotwired after that.
So let me ask you this, which is probably a hard question for you to answer because you've been at this so long. But if you weren't doing what you're doing now, what do you think you'd be doing instead?
I don't really know. If I didn't make it playing music, I'd probably be working on guitars, I suppose. I did that for a while, and I really liked that. And I also help my dad in his mechanic shop, and I really like doing the body work part of it and painting and stuff like that. So one of those two things probably.
Yeah, you seem to be the kind of guy, you got to be doing something with your hands that you get a lot out of that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's great, man. Hey, so tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or would find a little odd.
Let's see. One thing would probably be, as much as a straight traditional country guy as I am, I actually like a lot of really heavy rock. Like, I was a huge Pantera fan, big Black Label Society fan, all that, even Slipknot. I listened to a lot of Slipknot and all that stuff.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
That's not usually heavy, you know, heavy. That's not even heavy metal. That's like the next level beyond heavy metal.
Really. Yeah, I'm a big Black Label Society fan. Well, if you I like, love Zach.
Yeah, if you like Zach, of course. Most important thing your dad taught you overall?
Musically or just in life?
Yeah, in life. In life.
Oh, man, he's taught me so much. I guess the biggest one would just always be honest. If you're feeling something, don't hold back. You know, let somebody know what you're feeling. Don't leave any room for people to speculate how you're feeling.
I like how you put that. Don't leave any room for people to speculate how you're feeling. I really like that. Yeah, that's important because it's hard to take care of yourself if you're not doing that.
Yeah.
You know? How about mom? What's the most important thing your mom taught you?
That's a big one for her, too. Just always try your best and work hard. And if something that you're excited about doesn't happen, don't get yourself down. Something else will come around. That's a big one. Because when you first move to Nashville, you know, you get called about, hey, this gig just came available. I'm going to put your name in. And you hear that a lot. You know, I'm going to put your name in for this gig. Or I know somebody in this band, you know, I think you got a good shot. And you just can't get discouraged if they don't call, or even if you do call and you go to an audition and you don't get the gig for whatever reason, you know, just stay in it. Something will come up. That's a big one that my mom definitely taught me through.
Don't get discouraged if things don't work out. Man, it's like you have great parents, real supportive.
Oh, yeah, the best.
Do you have a superpower, man, a non-musical superpower?
I don't know, really. I don't know if I have a non-musical superpower. I play a lot of Call of Duty.
That might be it. That's a valid answer, man. What's the best money you've ever spent?
Best money I ever spent. I guess it'd have to be, I don't know. I guess I don't really regret spending any of the money that I've spent. I've always wound up with something out of it, even if it seemed like I shouldn't be spending the money at the time. It always wound up being something great. Now, recently, some of the best money I spent is I got a 65 Baseman off of one of my buddies that he was the only other owner.
And oh, wow.
That was good money spent. I've
Holy
used that a lot.
Smokes.
Yeah.
And aren't, as my understanding is, that was basically the, you know, the Marshall Plexi.
There's actually a mod that you can do to it that makes one of the channels very Marshall-y.
Wow. Yeah, I know guys who've picked those up and they're just so happy about getting those.
I love it for the studio. That's my main studio amp, is the Baseman.
Is it like a 4x12 combo or?
Yeah.
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 How many watts is that? 100?
No, the Baseman I believe is 50 watts or maybe 45, something like that.
Interesting, man. Yeah, I've seen those. I was in Carter when I was up in Nashville, and I saw he had one or two of them in there.
That's a great store. I love Carter.
Until you look at the price, it's good. It's like, wow, if I could do, you know, it's like, man, I want to play this. I want to play this. And then you got to look at it to buy it. Maybe not so much, you know.
That's what I feel the best money spent is when you find a really good deal on something that you absolutely love.
Yeah.
I got a great deal on that because my buddy helped me out on that. Got a great deal. I got a real 64 twin that I absolutely love also. And I got a great deal on that. And that's another one of my favorite amps.
That's fantastic, man. You got some good ampage there, man.
Yeah, and still one of my go-to amps. I used it yesterday on Broadway. I still love the PV Special 130.
Dude, you know what? I bought... do you know who John Prestia is?
I don't believe so.
He's Tim McGraw's guitar tech.
Okay.
So I was hanging out with him, man, and I was playing over this little Fender. It's like an old 60s Fender Junior something. It was a little blackface.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this thing sounds so good. Do you have something around here like that you could sell that's a combo like that? Because I have a Maz, a Dr. Z. It's a 38. I'm just playing in my office. I'm not gigging. And it's, you know, I have that and a 2x12 Marshall. It's way overkill. Yeah. So he goes, hey, man, look around. And he's got like, you know, 50 amps. And he goes, it's just which one do I want to part with? And I wound up buying a PV Delta Blues. It's a 30-watt 1x15 combo. Oh, my God.
Yeah, some of that PV stuff, man, is amazing. Like these amps from the 80s, the Special 130, it's just a solid-state PV amp. And that's all Danny Patton ever played through. And guys like Brent, he used one forever. James Mitchell, another monster guitar player here in town, he uses one. Rob Riley, another great player, uses them. And I've been using them since Danny got me hooked on them. I actually have one of Danny's old 130s.
That's really cool, man. Yeah, I couldn't be happier with this amp. It's got tremolo, reverb, dirty channel, clean. I mean, what the hell is the...
The overdrive channel on the 130 is amazing. I played for a long time without any pedals.
Oh, this thing's fantastic, yeah.
And I absolutely love that amp. And it's just a workhorse. You can beat the daylights out of it and it'll still work.
Yeah, man. I'm sold now on the older PVs for sure, man.
Yeah, they're great amps. Although yesterday I did have to give it the old PV punch to get it working. You got to punch it out right by the handle, get the solder to connect back in.
Hey, do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Recently, one of my buddies in Craig's band and one of my other friends got me into golf really big. And I never thought that I would love playing golf ever. I thought it was dumb. And then they took me out one day and I love it now. So I've been doing a lot of golfing the last couple of years or last year and a half about. And so I've been into that real big.
That's cool, man. Get you out of the house. 'Cause I know like most of the musicians I talk to, you're on the road all the time, man. And like when you're home, you're not leaving unless you're going out for a session.
That's the big thing now. And nowadays you hardly ever leave the house for a session. You know, I come into my studio here and so I'm in the house even if I'm cutting tracks. Right. So, yeah, me and Matt Lee, you're talking about.
Yeah. He golfs. You guys go golfing together?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we go together.
Good, man.
Have a really good time.
Yeah, he's a really good dude, man. He's a really good dude.
Oh, yeah, I love Matt. He was a big help when I moved to town, for sure.
Yeah, he's that kind of guy. I just spoke to him the other day, actually, when I was in town. We didn't have we couldn't hook up, but I wanted to talk to him at least on the phone and catch up with him.
Yeah.
Hey, what's the favorite part of what you do and the least favorite?
My favorite part is just getting to do what I love for a living. You know, a lot of people don't really get the chance to say, you know, when someone asks you, what do you do for a living? Well, I play guitar for a country artist. You know, it's not a lot of people get the opportunity to do that. And I've been really blessed and worked hard to get to where I am. And so just getting to do something that I absolutely love would be my favorite part. Least favorite part is sometimes, you know, the road life gets old.
Sure. Traveling, that's a pretty common...
I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, and I love it. But just, you know, sometimes it's nice to sleep in your own bed.
Oh, yeah, man.
That would be the only downside to it, if you even want to consider it a downside, really.
Sure.
Even when you're stuck out on the road for weeks at a time, I mean, it's still not that bad. You're sitting on a big brand new tour bus with anything you wanted, a home anyway. So, but it's still nice. And obviously, you know, I miss playing with my dad's band and stuff like that. But
sure. But you'd miss that no matter what you were doing, because you probably wouldn't be living at home.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah. I'd love being in Nashville. I won't be moving back to Wheatfield.
I hear you, man. Hey, what's the toughest decision you've ever had to make, or the hardest thing you've ever had to do?
A lot of times, if you're talking musically, it'd be having to, move on from certain gigs that I really loved and loved the people that I was working with, and just had to make a decision for myself personally of what was going to benefit me the most at the time. That would be a hard thing.
Can I tell you that almost 100% of the time when people answer that question as it relates to music, that is the exact same answer everybody gives?
Yeah, it's because these people become your family, you know, when you're out there on the road with them for so long. And then when you get a different offer or decide that it's time to move on, it's like breaking up with a comfortable relationship. Sure. You know?
Yeah. Well, especially when they're taking good care of you financially and you're being treated properly. Yeah. That's exactly what I hear, man. Two more questions, brother. Best advice you've ever been given, and who gave it to you?
I've been given tons of advice by my parents and my grandparents, and just all of their gems of knowledge over the years have been great. One great one that I always liked a lot was one that Danny told me that I think really, really just stays true, and that's any guitar player can teach you something, even if it's what not to do.
Man, that's a really good advice. I like that. Because you could say that about anything in any situation.
Exactly.
You know?
Whether it be the way he's approaching something or the way that he's acting, you know, that's another thing that Danny always said, and his brother Jamie still says it, and my dad says it, don't get the big head.
I'll tell you right now, man, you're like a super humble guy. I couldn't ever see you having a problem with that. I mean,
stay humble. That was a big one from my dad and all the guys that I grew up playing with. And I grew up to not be able to stand arrogance. I don't like it, especially when there's guys out there, you know, no matter how good you are, there's somebody out there that's just as good, if not 10 times better.
In anything you do, man, you're 100% right. I know.
There's a kid in his basement right now that could easily do exactly what I'm doing.
Right.
And you just got to realize, you know, no matter how good you think you are, there's going to be somebody that is going to come along and be just as good.
Sure. Totally.
And when you meet guys like Vince and Brent and all that are who they are, and you meet them and see how humble they are, it's hard to fathom why people are arrogant when guys like Vince Gill and Brent Mason are super nice guys. And then you meet people that are arrogant. It's like, man, have you ever talked to Vince? you could learn some things from him.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I interviewed Jerry McPherson.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent a lot of time talking, and you know, he played on the road with Vince for quite some time. And he had so many nice things to say about him that were just in that line of just what a sweet guy he is. I mean, he's just the most humble, gentle, kind person around.
Every time I've been around him, whether it be if I'm watching the Time Jumpers or if I'm at the Opry playing and I see Vince, he's always been really kind. Very kind person.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
And that's how most of the people are in Nashville. It's a big family, you know. No one, I mean, you're going to have your jerks in any line of work, but you just kind of cut those people out and
yeah.
pay attention to the ones that give you the respect that you deserve, and you give them the respect back.
I think it's fewer and far between in Nashville, actually, than other places. Everybody's been, I mean, just tremendous. And I'm an outsider, but I mean, everybody's been so nice and kind to me there, and it's just, you know.
Well, another thing that you have to have the mentality of in Nashville, especially, is you could be at a bar playing and think that you're doing everything that's just blowing people's mind, and then the guy sitting at the bar just played on a number one record, you know. So you definitely don't want to show your ass in Nashville, basically. Because you never know who's in the bar.
Well, that's what I was telling my wife when we were walking up and down Broadway, and, you know, she was asking questions, and I was, you know, explaining to her that, you know, she said, does everybody play there? And I said, usually when you first come to town, at some point you play there, because the more of those you do, there's guys in the audience that'll come over to you and say, hey, man, I really like your playing. My buddy, or we're looking for a guitar player. And that's the breeding ground for those connections to jump off.
A lot of those things happen like that. When I first moved to town, I was playing at Legends. And I'd only been in town for a few months, and I auditioned for the band Perry because a guy was in there. I didn't get that gig. I think I was a little too country.
But, yeah.
which I'm fine with that. I'll never apologize for being too country.
Man, you gotta be it's who you are, man. You can't apologize for being who you are.
And that's how I met Georgette. Her and her husband were in the bar at Music City Bar and Grill watching me play. And we were doing some George Jones stuff, and she came up and introduced herself, and that's how I started working for her. And
wow.
The way I got the gig with Craig is his fiddle player is one of my best friends, Jim Ed Hodges.
Hmm.
And I was playing a gig at Music City Bar. That's a place I played at a lot. And Robbie Turner was playing steel with the band at the time. He played for Waylon Jennings for years, dear friend of mine. And he needed a night off. So I called Jim Ed and I said, hey, man, you want to come play fiddle with us tonight? And he came out and played. And that night after we played, he goes, man, Craig's looking for a guitar player. I think I can set you up. And the next week I went over to the band leader's house and met with him, played two songs, and I started with him the week after.
Man, so, imagine that. And you weren't thinking any of that.
No, I just called him up because he's one of my good friends and just wanted to pick with him, basically.
That's so cool, man. I have this saying, you know, it says you can't connect the dots moving forward.
Yeah.
But it's amazing when you go back and look at, sometimes something as simple as you make a left turn instead of a right turn change your life.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's wild, man. I'm glad all that all worked out for you. And with that in mind, I'll ask you your last question, man. What's your definition of happiness, Chuck?
Oh, good family and good friends. Really, I mean, you can do all these great things. You know, I've been to all but two states, and I've been to like 10 different countries, and get to play the Opry, you know, 15 times a year. But none of that would mean anything if I didn't have people to share it with. So I still, to this day, since my first time playing the Opry, the first time I played, my family was with me, but every time that I play the Opry, I call them on the way to the Opry, and I call them on the way home.
It's really cool, man.
It's just something that I always do, you know, especially my dad. I call him to ask him how it sounded because I know that he'll critique it.
That's great, man.
I call and talk to my mom about it. My grandparents, they listened to every time I played the Opry. They've listened. I don't think they've missed one.
That's fantastic, man. I'm so happy you got all that support because you deserve it. You're a really nice, genuine guy, man. I really appreciate you and your time that you spent with me today, man. You know.
Oh, thank you.
What? How can people find you and like send you money and support you because you're a great guy and you're a tremendous player? Well, I'll tell you right now, go on YouTube and look for Chuck Ward Guitar. I mean, the guy is just, I mean, it's just, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass or anything. You know that. It's just a joy to watch you play, man. It really is.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you want to promote Cardgy Guitars?
Yeah, definitely. If you're in the market for a great guitar, definitely go to Cardgy Guitars on Facebook or Instagram and check them out. They make Randy does Strats and Tellies right now is his two big things, and they're just a far superb instrument if you're looking for that classic feel and touch. It was pretty cool getting to talk to him. He's a cabinet builder, a furniture maker. And he said he started building guitars because his wife was getting mad about him buying guitars all the time. So he bought the stuff and said, well, I think I can just make my own.
Holy smokes.
And they are truly amazing guitars.
That's a cool story, man.
And he's a great guy, great family. And really blessed to meet him out there and start this relationship with him.
And it's Cardgy, K-A-R-G-E, correct?
Yep.
Cardgy Guitars. And will someone sound like Chuck Ward if they buy the Cardgy Guitars?
My dad gets that a lot, actually, when people call and ask my dad to build him a guitar. He said that's one of his biggest things. People call and say, I want exactly what Chuck has. And
they don't get it.
He actually had somebody mad one time because they didn't get the tone that I had.
And you've got to be kidding me.
The tone, I mean, tone's 90% in your right hand. I mean, Brent could play my guitar and sound like Brent. Vince could play it and sound like Vince. I'll play it and sound like me. And, anybody that plays a guitar, they're going to sound like them. It's just the way you approach it, that you think it. And, but a big part of my tone has always been EMG pickups. Also, them guys have been absolutely wonderful to me. That was my first endorsement was EMG, and I was using EMG well before I was endorsed by them, and they've just been great to me. Great bunch of guys over there, and a lot of people were kind of surprised that I use EMGs a lot being a country player, but Vince Gill uses EMGs. I have the Vince Gill set in my Strat, actually. I know Keith Urban was using EMGs for a little bit. I'm not sure if he still is. But I just love them. They're great pickups. That's another thing. Danny used EMGs, so I used EMGs. when I was starting to play and, idolizing Danny, I was doing anything that Danny did. And he was an EMG guy, so that's what I've always used.
Man, I could see why people gravitated to you to mentor you, because you're like a super eager guy, and you're one of these people that you could tell you acknowledge if someone has a little more knowledge than you do, you just learn from it and don't try to tell them what they don't know. And you're just a good student. I could tell that.
Oh yeah. You listen to anybody. I mean, anybody's going to say something like Danny said, you can learn something from everybody, even if it's what not to do.
Yeah. Even if it's what not to do. Absolutely.
You listen to somebody talk, and if they want to teach you, even if you don't agree with what they're saying, just listen to it. Sometimes, sometimes it's hard to bite your tongue, what they say, how many guitar players does it take to change light bulb? Just one, but the rest will stand around and say they can do it better.
That's right, man. I know. I hear you. As you get older, it gets easier to not to bite your tongue. You just don't give a shit. No, it's just like, you kind of expect, you're able to, switch off easier, so it's not.
Yeah, even, just tune it out.
Yeah. It's just like not relevant. Like, it's kind of like someone's talking, but you don't have to hear them anymore. You just shut off. Yeah. It's kind of funny.
Kind of got that Charlie Brown teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I don't know why that happens, but it's like so easy. I used to be like, not hot tempered, but if you're talking shit, I would let you know you're talking shit. Now it's just, I think you just adopt, you want less stress.
Yeah.
And telling somebody that, I don't care what you're saying is stressful. But just shutting off and smiling and just, going into your theater up there and thinking good thoughts about something else is just a lot easier, man.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Chuck, I really appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much for everything. It's a real pleasure talking to you. You're a really classy guy. Check out Chuck online, Chuck Ward. He plays tellies and he uses EMG pickups. He also plays Cardgy Guitars, K-A-R-G-E. from Randy Cargi up in Massachusetts. And that's it, man. I appreciate your time. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Thanks again to Chuck Ward for spending time with us today. I really appreciate it. He's an amazing player. If you ever get a chance to check out Craig Morgan on the road, you'll get to see Chuck. And go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get notified about future episodes, along with some cool stuff for guitar players. Now be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun, most important. Till next time, peace and love, and I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.